Well, we don't have an auto bailout yet. As you heard in the news at the top of the hour, the Bush administration could act on it tomorrow to approve some sort of automaker bailout, not from new money, but from the money that's been set aside for the financial services sector, the so-called Bank Rescue Fund. Last week, the Senate refused to pass a bill that the House of Representatives had looked favorably upon. The members of the House were happy with what they had done, but the Republican members of the Senate didn't like the fact that the UAW wouldn't agree to more concessions or quicker concessions in renegotiating their contract, which is up in 2011 with the Big Three in Detroit. Here to talk about all of this is Darren Gilley, who's the president of Local 1760 of the United Auto Workers. Hi, Darren. How are you today?
Hi, Paul. How are you?
I'm doing okay. What do you hear from National about the chances of something getting done to bail out your industry?
Well, I believe Senator Levin of Michigan thought that there would be some kind of word tomorrow, Wednesday, on how much and if the president, under what conditions, will provide funds through the TARP.
Now, the TARP is the
Troubled Assets Relief Program.
Right, that's the bank rescue program I was referring to there. The last I heard was that Levin was talking about coming up with something like $10 billion or I think it was $8 billion for GM and a few million for Chrysler, and Ford would get some sort of credit line. Is that what you understand?
That's my understanding at this point, but obviously those negotiations are top secret, as they say at this point.
Is that going to be enough to save the industry, or are they going to come back in a few months and say, by the way, we're on the verge of bankruptcy again?
I think it's not enough to save the industry. It's enough to get them through, hopefully, this financial crunch. I think this industry, like many, and automakers all over the world, are waiting for this economic crisis to pass. And once it passes and credit starts flowing again, we can return to, you know, somewhat more normal times. But every country, Paul, has subsidized or provided assistance to their automakers to get through this crisis. I was reading in Auto News today, which is a trade magazine, that Carlos Ghosn, the head of Nissan, Renault Nissan, and I just want to read a quote to you so people understand exactly their viewpoint on it. His quote is, "It is healthy to financially support strategic industries," he recently told reporters, quote, "job destruction will be massive in those countries that do not." Foreign countries have been subsidizing, supporting, and protecting their auto industries, which they view as a vital part of their manufacturing base, for decades. They are also providing additional assistance to get through this financial crisis.
Darren, do you feel that you and your fellow blue-collar members of the UAW are kind of getting the shaft, especially since Congress and the Treasury Department were so quick to line up behind white-collar jobs at AIG and Bear Stearns and try to save those people? They got a parachute, and you're getting the shaft?
Well, I think $700 billion in, what, 2 weeks with no strings attached, barely?
Yeah.
Some very weak language on executive compensation, which evidently, by reports I'm reading now, is not even enforceable, as opposed to 4 days' worth of hearings, countless hours of negotiations and analysis. Yes, I believe that there is obviously a double standard between the banker sector and Main Street.
And I hear a lot of complaints about, oh, these automakers, they make so much, they make $73 an hour. That's not true, is it?
It is not true, and I would be glad to break that down for you, how they came to that figure.
Please do.
Okay, it's all over the Internet. I invite you to check it out. Check the International, www.uaw.org. They have a great video on how that is, or how that came to be tabulated. But what happened was, they took the active workers' pay, added to it all the retiree obligations of health care, pension, of all the retirees, and divided it by the hours worked. We have about 150,000 Big Three active workers. We have over 400,000 retirees currently. And they added all that in together to get a per-hour figure, which was the $73.
Mm-hmm. So all of those legacy costs were added back on there. What is the average UAW worker make, somebody who's been on the job maybe 10 years in the Chrysler plant out in Fenton or the GM plant out in Wentzville? Just give me a ballpark figure of an average salary there.
Once a line worker reaches full scale, it's $27 and change an hour.
$27 an hour. And that you got to add benefits and all that sort of stuff.
Right. Then we have, you know, your health care and your pension. But also, a lot of people do not understand, I don't think, that they understand the restructuring that has been occurring in the industry, and the concessions that the UAW has already given. And In 2005, we gave back a dollar an hour to help provide our retirees with the health care they were promised. Now, that was promised by the company. Now, we don't mind. Obviously, our retirees, they led the way, so we're glad to help them out. So we took a dollar an hour pay cut, you know, so we could transfer those funds to them. Last year's agreement, which was signed in 2007, is good for 4 years. There will be no raises for UAW members at the big three automakers. And then last week, President Gelfinger and the leaders of the big three locals got together and suspended the jobs bank and are looking at additional ways that they can help the automakers get through this situation.
So what was it the Republicans were demanding last week in the Senate?
Well, I wasn't part of those negotiations, but my understanding is they wanted us to go by sometime in 2009 to take whatever package, the transplants, you know, the Hondas and the Hyundais and the Mercedes, that have been given state subsidies to set up shop here, may I add, but whatever package they had. And to give you an example of how hard this would be for some of them, Toyota in Georgetown, which has been there about 20, 25 years, pays about $27 an hour, much like Big Three. They're afraid we're going to organize them, so that's why they do that. Kia is going to open a plant, and they've announced that their starting pay will be $14.90. Honda just opened a plant in Indiana at $14.84. So while we did negotiate an agreement in last year's agreement, I didn't touch this earlier, that new hires will be paid $14.50 an hour or so, but once they get to the top 80% seniority, they go into the scale program, eventually ending up at 27 over, you know, several years.
So it sounds to me like for beginning workers at some of these foreign auto plants, the pay is right around what you guys pay a beginning UAW employee. But once you get in there for a few years and you've been on the line, the pay is pretty much the same, right?
Well, it's the same at certain plants, and this is the point. Maybe I didn't make that as clear as I should.
Well,
the
Toyota plant. But my question here, Darren, is it that legacy cost that is really the difference between how American car manufacturers have to look at their financial situation and these subsidized foreign companies like Toyota and Honda and Kia and all the rest look at their financial situation? Is it that legacy cost because we've had people making cars here in America for three and four generations, and a lot of those are still on the backs of the union and the corporate pension rolls?
Absolutely. And if we talk about providing retiree health care as a legacy cost, which it is, but that's because GM has been around 100 years, and they've managed to be a successful company for most of that time and still are. They were the number one auto seller in the world last year. So they're still a successful company. Those costs are there because they've been around, and they do have people who retired, but they took a corporate responsibility to take care of their employees. We think that's a good thing. When we hear Mitt Romney, or I hear Mitt Romney, come on the Sunday shows like he did and say, we just need to get rid of the legacy cost. And he brushes his hand aside like he's just knocking money off the table. That's not correct. Those are people. Those are people that gave up wages, they gave up benefits, they served their lives in these auto plants.
Isn't it nice when multimillionaires tell people who've been working their whole lives, by the way, all that stuff you earned in those years you were working, you don't get anymore. I don't see him giving up his pension as former governor of Massachusetts. I don't hear about former senators and congressmen and presidents giving up the pensions that they earned. I don't hear about former CEOs of companies and big shot stock traders on Wall Street saying, oh yeah, all that money that I was able to put aside during the years that I was working, I'm going to give that up to for the good of the industry. I never hear that.
No, and you never will hear it. Much like we talked about the banker bailout earlier, I've not heard one time somebody say that the stockbrokers or the insurance salesmen or the geniuses who came up with credit default swaps need to start taking pay cuts or responsibility for what their actions have led to.
Darren,
that's the immediate cause of this problem in our industry.
Darren, I've got to take a break. Can you stick around for another segment?
I'd love to, Paul.
Can we include some listener phone calls as well?
Yes, please.
All right, 314-969-KTRS, 1-888-550-KTRS. Most cell phones get in free. It's Star KTRS. Darren Gilley is the president of Local 1760 of the United Auto Workers. Here with Paul Harris on the Big 550 KTRS. I'm Paul Harris, talking with Darren Gilley, who's the president of Local 1760 of the UAW, the United Auto Workers. A lot of his members are going to be sitting around for more time than they thought they would, because the GM plant in Wentzville is going to be idled an additional 3 weeks. It was originally scheduled to just be from December 24th to January 11th. Now they're going to idle the plant the weeks of January 12th and February 16th and February 23rd. They got more than 2,000 people there making GMC Savannas and Chevy Express full-size vans. More downtime across the state at their plant in Kansas City also, which makes the Chevy Malibu and the Saturn Aura. They're cutting back production by a third in the first quarter at General Motors, if there is a General Motors when the first quarter runs around. Darren, what happens if GM declares bankruptcy?
Wow. I'm not exactly sure what happens, but from a supplier, I can tell you that there's going to be major repercussions. And I would basically like to cite a Detroit News article that said 239,000 Big 3 jobs would be lost, 800,000 from suppliers, and 1.4 million from the people that we support through our spending. The problem with the GM bankruptcy, a lot of people who don't know the industry don't understand, is I work at a supplier, but a lot of our work comes from the Big 3. In my case, it's Chrysler. So if we don't have that business, we can't sustain ourselves. So whatever parts we produce, let's say for GM, or it could even be a Honda or a Toyota or a Nissan, once the company goes down, nobody gets any parts. And it wouldn't be just the Big 3 plants closing down. It would be every plant in the United States would close down at least for a while if that happened.
So the tentacles of the American automakers even reach to the foreign car manufacturers through the suppliers.
Absolutely. If you were to look at Japanese CEOs, those guys are in favor of our government assisting the Big 3 because they understand the supplier problem I just described. And if it happens like that, they're going to be hit just as well in this market. Now, I got to tell you, they do get a little few shots in if you've read any of their press that for years we've been lecturing them on free market economics while they strategically subsidize their auto industry through currency manipulation and value-added taxes and national health care, for example. But they keep gaining market share on us, and we wonder why. They know why. But we keep preaching free trade, and they keep taking our jobs.
Even Toyota announced this morning that they're going to be stopping production of Priuses in Mississippi because fewer people are buying their cars as well. You know, while GM is down 41% and Chrysler is down 37% and Ford is down about the same amount, the foreign car manufacturers are finding the same thing, so the economy is hitting them as well.
Absolutely. My understanding is that plant in Mississippi, they're going to finish construction because they're 90% of the way there, but they're not going to put any machines in it until things turn around.
Before I go to the phones here, Downer, 314-969-KTRS and 1-888-550-KTRS, will things be better or different in some way for you in an Obama administration? Or do you think they will?
Well, I hope so. I think President Obama has realized, we recently just talked about free trade a little bit, and he's committed to renegotiating some of those agreements. We have to turn this country's economic direction around to where it's not free trade and deregulate and try to get everything for the cheapest possible price at the expense of every productive capacity we have. Great nations don't consume their way to greatness. Nations produce their way to greatness. He understands that. That's why, obviously, there's much discussion about the stimulus plan for infrastructure. But the same thing has to be done to put our manufacturing at a level playing field with other countries. We just talked about Japan, but they all do it. Korea last year, just for an example.
Darren Gilley from the United Auto Workers here on the Big 550 KTRS. Let's go to the phones, and here's John. Hi, John. How are you today?
I'm fine. How are you guys?
Good, thanks.
Hey, I just got a couple quick points here. Where in the world did this free trade word come up? There's nothing free about this. We lose our butts on everything. And also, you know, as far as UAW, recall back in World War II, I think we converted a whole lot of car companies over to making tanks and airplanes and other things. What in the world is going to happen, you know, if we get in a real serious bind if we lose our UAW, you know, people?
Darren?
I agree. Walter Reuther authored that plan, 5,000 planes a day. Google it, you'll find interesting reading. And that was designed instead of building plants from the ground up, which took a year and a half, to convert auto plants into tanks, planes, armored vehicles that we needed for World War II. That's why we're called the Arsenal of Democracy, and there's a serious national security component to maintaining our domestic auto industry.
As I said before, go ahead.
One more point, if I may. You know, the people, you know, like Fannie Mae and all these other people, they're the ones that created all this. And boy, our Congress, they didn't think of twice at bailing them people out.
Well, you know what? That gets me to the next point I was going to bring up. I'm glad you called, John, because, Darren, I wanted to ask you your take on this. As I said before, I hate the fact that the men and women who are on the line in the factories are getting any kind of blame for this, like it's your fault because the car manufacturers didn't have any foresight as to how they needed to have a new business model, how the industry paradigm was changing, how consumers were changing, what kind of vehicles they wanted, that we're not going to be driving Hummers and giant Ford Expeditions around in an era when gas prices had moved up over the last few years. Consumers started seeing that several years ago, maybe even before Katrina, but certainly since, and have actually changed. And there's a report out today that says that we have driven less in the last year. The decline from last year to this year is the biggest decline in 100 years. I mean, since going back to the beginning of the car, there's never been this much of a decline in driving in America. And Detroit didn't see that as well as some of these foreign car companies did. How much of the blame for the current status of your industry do you place on those CEOs and the people who were in charge there in Detroit?
Paul, I agree. There have been some issues with management, but I don't think it's quite as severe as a lot of people. They overstate the case with that, and this is going to go against conventional wisdom. But I think if you simply look at where the sales were in this country in the 90s, early 2000s, when gasoline was still reasonable, and we don't have energy policy, so it's kind of a roll of the dice that gasoline was reasonable. Even last month, the top two vehicles in this country were the F-150 Ford pickup and the Chevy Silverado from Chevy. The Ford F-150 has been the number one selling vehicle in the United States for 31 years.
Yep.
People in this country like trucks. They like bigger cars. Last month, you look at the sales numbers, the Corolla, the Camry, the Accord, and the Focus all suffered double-digit sales losses. And not just because the market's down, because people are returning to big vehicles.
And you know what? That's because we don't learn from our mistakes. You and I are both old enough, Darren, to have lived through the energy crisis of the late 70s and early 80s. And I thought perhaps we would learn something from odd, even gas rationing and the lines and all of that sort of stuff. But we didn't learn from that. We went right back to the gas guzzlers. And I'm afraid now, don't get me wrong, I love paying a dollar and a half for gas instead of four and a half for gas. I love that. Expenses are way down for a lot of people, and in this economy, that's a good thing. But I'm worried that people are going to go, okay, I can buy the big vehicles again, and fuel efficiency will go right out the window.
Yeah, I agree, and then I love $1.50 a gallon, too. Who doesn't? It's like a free tax rebate almost.
Yeah.
But the point I was trying to get to with my earlier statement was that Japan and Europe, they already have small cars for a reason. Japan, they import 100% of their oil. In Europe, they have tight spaces, so on and so forth, but they make small vehicles. So it's not like they had an epiphany that we should be making small vehicles in this market. If you'll notice, the plants they built here, what do they build? They build SUVs, and they build trucks.
And they build Camrys, and they build Priuses, and they build...
They don't build Priuses in the United States.
Well, they're going to.
Well, that's theory as of now. What they do build is Tundras, Sequoias.
Yep.
You know, that's what they build. So to view the Japanese, because they were a genius, I think they just came from a market where that's the way it was, and we came from a market where we had our own biases.
All right, let's get another phone call in here. Steve, you're on the Big 550 KTRS. Hi.
Hi, Paul. I just want to make one comment about what you said, how we shouldn't blame the workers at all. I think the only fair way to look at this, there's equal blame to go around. I think management is completely at fault on the side of the automakers, but at the same time, you got to put some blame on the workers as well, because quality was a huge issue with our cars, going back to, as you said, the 70s and 80s, when the Japanese first came in. So I think the only fair way is to put blame on both sides of the fence and not say it's one particular side that was at fault.
Is that a fair criticism, Darren?
It could be, but I hate to say quality is much and their assembly issues. Let's face it, these plants produce as many as 1,000 vehicles a day. So can they all be perfectly done? We try our best, trust me. Quality is a humongous issue in my plant.
How much of that is line workers not doing their job versus poor design?
I think most of it's poor design, but I think most of that has been remedied. If the 2007 three-year dependability ratings by J.D. Power, which measure how many defects have occurred over the first 3 years of a vehicle's life, Buick and Lexus were tied for first, followed by Cadillac, Mercury, and Honda. Toyota wasn't even there. Matter of fact, in 2005, Toyota had more recalls than they had vehicles.
Steve, I'm glad you called. Here's Jim on the Big 550 KTRS. Hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Good. I have a comment in regards to the auto workers getting their time off, which I know the plant's shut down and stuff like that, but is it still that they get time off at 95% of pay?
How's that work, Darren?
Yeah, as we mentioned earlier in the conversation, they suspended the jobs bank. As of now, you go into a program called SUB, which we help fund. I want to make this clear. A lot of people think this just comes out of the employer's pocket. It does not. SUB pay is funded by the hourly workers, okay, with some help from the corporation. When we go out on, you know, we're laid off for 3 weeks, we collect unemployment, and the difference up to 95% of net pay is made up for by the SUB fund.
So these people who are working, for instance, in the GM plant in Wentzville, when it gets idled next week and then gets idled again in January and then gets idled again in February, the people who work there will continue to have some amalgam of money coming in from various sources that will equal almost 95% of their pay?
It's 95% net. It actually comes out to be about 72% of what you normally bring home.
How could that happen in today's world with all these other people that are in construction and everything else? And we're looking at these people and how they get paid. That, you know, I look at the other side of this thing and I think, you know, how could this be that in America, you know, if you're a construction worker, my dad was 37 years in the Teamsters. I was over 20 years, and I've got my own company now. I have all American cars and everything else. But the fact of the matter is, if one of my guys gets laid off, there's no way that we can put a fund together to pay him 75 to 95% of his pay. And yet these guys get paid that high of a pay structure when they're not working, and it's coming out of some pocket. It's coming out of a union, and that's partially why their $70-some dollars an hour is where their benefits and all that come out of. I mean, if the auto workers from years past paid for their own pension and put their own pension together, why are the guys today still having to pay 100% of their pension? Where was the money spent? And why was it spent on something besides the pensions where it should have been kept?
Well, the pensions is a different question. But, Darren, you could understand how other union workers might be bitter about the fact that when they get laid off, they don't get anything. And when your guys get laid off, they're getting 72 to 95% of their pay.
I understand that. To reference the trade just a second, though, we do basically the same thing they're doing. There's a set amount per hour, we'll just say put in a bucket, and they decide how they want to divide that bucket up. That's exactly the same thing we've done. As I mentioned, the subpay is, in this state, $320 of it is your regular unemployment that every person working in this state pays into, including the auto workers. So that's $320 of that figure. The rest of the amount is divided between the corporation and amounts that our workers, the members themselves, have put into a fund to be divided up when they're laid off, much like the trades put in for vacation, where they decide to put a certain amount toward their pension. The $75 an hour figure, as we mentioned, is totally bogus. Right. That is not even close to what an active worker makes. That's dividing all the expenses of labor for the past 40 years into one hourly figure.
Gotcha. Darren, I've got a lot of people with questions. You want to stick around?
Absolutely.
Darren Gilley, who's the president of UAW Local 1760, here with Paul Harris on the Big 550 KTRS. Talking with Darren Gilley. He's the president of Local 1760 of the United Auto Workers. Hoping to hear some good news out of Washington for his industry. There's word that the Bush administration could act as early as tomorrow to approve an automaker bailout. The Senate wouldn't agree to what the House wanted to do, which was set aside a huge amount of money out of a new fund. Instead, the Bush administration may use what's left in the Bank Rescue Fund, TARP as it's known, and give maybe $15 million to Ford and Chrysler and help, I'm sorry, to GM and Chrysler and help Ford set up a line of credit going forward. All of that to stave off the bankruptcy that at least GM says is right on their doorstep. They've been pounding the pavement in Washington with their lobbyists trying to get something done because they say that they may not make it to New Year's the way things are going. Do you think things really are that desperate at this point, Darren?
Well, Paul, I don't have access to their top secret records, but I don't think they would be going through all this, including 4 days of grilling by an unsympathetic Congress, if things weren't pretty dire.
Do you think that there should be some oversight? There's talk of appointing some sort of car czar. I hate that name. But appointing somebody who could not only make sure that the money is being spent on what it's supposed to be, but that these companies realign themselves with a new business plan for the future?
I'm not sure what person would have enough knowledge to run three car companies at once. But one thing they do need to look at, Paul, and this is something the focus has been so entirely on the auto industry, people forget the bigger picture. And this car czar if he had the power to implement federal policy changes, would be a fantastic idea. If you look at us over the last 30 years, we've gone from the world's greatest creditor nation to the world's greatest debtor nation. We've lost entire industries like shoes, TVs, textiles, electronics, almost lost the steel industry, and potentially the auto industry. Not every one of these industries could have been run badly. There's something else afoot, and it's many of our government policies that allow our trading partners to strategically target our market while protecting theirs, and that is something that needs to be addressed.
Are we really on the cusp of losing the auto industry, or are we on the cusp of losing the auto industry as based in Detroit?
Well, the issue is most of the auto industry is based in this country. And there's a lot of talk about the transplants. But to point out the few plants they have, there's been more investment by the big three in the last 4 years than all the transplants combined have invested in the United States in the last 25.
All right, let me go back to the phones here. 314-969-KTRS, star KTRS on most cell phones, and if you're out of town, anywhere in the USA, 1-888-550-KTRS. Jim, you're on the Big 550. Hi.
Hi, Paul. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Thank you. We missed you.
Thank you.
I don't want to bust this guy's chops, but I'm a big union supporter. But it just seems to me like anymore, I think that unions need to get over their preoccupation with exactly where the products are manufactured and get into representing the people who actually do service, or people in this country are doing something for a living, and unions need to figure out what it is and realize that they don't represent the product, they represent the worker who does whatever the worker does, and get in the business of representing these people in their workplace and get over their preoccupation with whether or not whatever product is being sold is manufactured in the United States.
Is that fair, Darren?
I don't believe so. I think, for one, I'll just speak for my local because that's what I know. We spend 99% of our time defending our members' interests to make sure they're treated with dignity and respect on the job. But it's undeniable the economics of the thing, whenever we're put behind a 10% disadvantage because Japan uses a value-added tax, or they manipulate their currency by 19%, or they provide their automakers national health care.
That's irrelevant. But the point is, you guys are supposed to be representing the worker. I mean, whether they're waiting tables or mowing lawns or, you know, painting houses or putting roofs on, or whatever they're doing, you guys should be representing them for whatever they're doing. It's not about, you're not a product representative. If you were, you'd just go into sales. You represent people, the workers in the workplace.
But I think all of those things that Darren was referring to go right back to how the end product does affect the people who are making those products in the long run. And if the economic conditions aren't there to support the manufacturing of those products, then the people who are working those lines each and every day aren't going to be able to do the job they're doing. Let me go to line four here, and Will, you're next on the Big 550 KTRS. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Glad to hear from you. Glad you took my call. My question is, for the last 3 years, I know two people that work for these auto industries. For the last 3 years, they've all got significant bonuses for profit sharing. I'm sure plus the CEOs have too. You know, I mean, last year they got an $8,000 check right before Christmas. The year prior to that, they got a $6,000. The year prior to that, they got a $4,000. Three or four, I can't remember. I seen the checks.
Okay.
My question is, you know, if they're in such bad shape, why are we negotiating all these deals to where, where's the deal where you work and get a fair wage? What else do you expect from all this? I mean,
yeah, I'm sure you've heard this complaint before. The big shots of the companies are taking these huge bonuses, and then they complain that we're going bankrupt.
Absolutely. We think that's part of the problem. I mean, when you have, you know, just point out some CEOs, it's not confined to the auto industry. I think in the U.S., the average CEO makes 400 times what the average line worker does.
Yeah.
That's obviously not sustainable.
Well, I know the guy in charge of Ford has said that next year he's only going to take a dollar, so he'll have to live off the $21 million he made last year. I guess they're going to be scrimping and saving around his house.
Yeah, if he wants to swap checks, I'm up.
Darren, I appreciate your time today. Thanks very much.
You're welcome, Paul. Thank you.
Darren Gilley is the president of Local 1760 of the UAW, the United Auto Workers, here on the Big 550 KTRS.